Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Never Feeling Relaxed Again. Well, Manton, the day has come. It's time for us to share one of our projects we've been working on for at least last couple months, and in our minds longer than that.
Right.
We have done a great job, I think, here on the Core Intuition podcast, running this show now for more than 5 years. And you and I sometimes think about, like, oh, well, it would be cool if we, you know, did some other stuff, like make some t-shirts and sell some t-shirts. But we've never done that. So we're going to sell our listeners.
Yeah, today we are going to launch a jobs board. And I'm excited about this because I feel like it helps a couple people potentially. It's a service for our listeners. If they're looking for jobs, looking for new Cocoa, Mac, iOS development jobs, can help them potentially. And also companies. Like, we have a lot of friends who are, you know, have either small companies or bigger companies or tons of companies hiring iOS people that we don't know, and helping them find good talent. And I think the people that listen to the show are good talent. What do you think?
Yeah, most of them. Most of them are pretty good. But, you know, it's true. For years, I have been asked by people because, you know, I, being like a blogger and then a podcaster, and people tend to like have trouble finding the people who, you know, the talent in this industry. And it's only gotten worse with iOS since there's just like an enormous demand now for engineering talent. And over the years, people would ask me, like, where do I find a great iOS developer? Where do I find a great Mac developer? And I would just have to like grimace and say, I don't know.
Right.
There used to be the Cocoa Dev jobs board was sort of like the best thing I could offer for a long time. And that's, as far as I know, that's gone. So,
yeah. And there's all these job boards out there, but I was surprised when I was looking at this, there's really nothing that fits the kind of thing that we were thinking about building and that we did build. Like, you have the general purpose, you know, monster.com style boards, which are just insane. It seems like, I don't know how you can find anything in those. You have very targeted stuff like the Dribbble job board, I think, is really nice, but it's just designers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have general programmer stuff like the Stack Exchange, Stack Overflow careers stuff. But that also is huge number of jobs and a very small percentage, you know, for Mac and iOS people. So just focusing on that we know well. And like you said, yeah, I mean, you get an email or someone says, hey, I'm looking for someone to hire. I usually say I'll keep my eye out for somebody.
Yeah,
but
yeah. And you kind of know in the back of your mind, yeah, I'm not going to find anybody.
Yeah, exactly. And they feel bad. So being able to point someone or a company to a specific place and say, this is the best place to find a Mac programmer. I like that.
And it's unusual, I think, for for us to just happen to have that opportunity to because we look, I'm so grateful that we have so many people listening to this podcast who are so talented, and hopefully we can hook some of you up with some great new jobs. We're launching with some great companies. Go to jobs.coreint.org and check it out.
Excellent. Yeah, let us know what you think, and hopefully it'll grow from there after we launch. So looking forward to seeing how it goes.
You know, Manton, after last week's conversation about Flappy Bird and the sort of simplicity, the elegant simplicity of Flappy Bird, I've really been thinking a lot about simplicity and almost using Flappy Bird as like a touchstone for, you know, should I add this feature? No, Flappy Bird. And like, as we've been putting the finishing touches on the job board, full credit to Manton, he's done all of the engineering on the job board, and I've just sort of like sat there and said, yep, nope. But
move that button over 2 pixels. Exactly. You're always micromanaging it.
Yeah, I was the Steve Jobs of this operation. But you know, likewise, it's like we've had thoughts like, oh, we should support, you know, having company logos in there for the job listings, and we need to have like a, you know, full featured like form input for people to attach their resumes and submit them. And the answer was just no, Flappy Bird. Because it felt instinctively correct after what we talked about with Flappy Bird last week, especially and like the simplicity. But then, as luck would have it, I was directed through Twitter to this article called an article about the so-called presenter's paradox. And it's a Harvard Business Review article that actually ties in, I think, really well to this, because it talks about I sort of like it was a stretch maybe for me to connect it to product design, but it talks about this psychological phenomenon where if you present to somebody like a list of attributes about you or about the way I'm adapting it about a product, then the value, the perceived value of all those attributes is not additive. So, for example, the way they frame it in this article, they say, if you're in a job interview and you're going through all the things you're really good at, and then you're like, oh, and also I have like a passing ability with Spanish, right? Like you're thinking like all of that good stuff about me and, you know, I have a little tiny bit of foreign language experience, and that's just going to add to like the appearance that I'm a good candidate. Mm-hmm. But they said that the way psychologically, the way that we evaluate the value of something is not additive, but it's averaging. So anytime you include something subpar among all of the other attributes, it brings down the average. Huh. And so that's kind of like something like Flappy Bird that only does like one or two things, like, you know, you flap or you crash and that's it. So if you like the flapping, then, you know, it's a 10, it's mm-hmm. It's a perfect 10. But if it had one other little thing, like if it had, you know, you flap and then sometimes you have to, you know, let's say spin or something.
Right.
And the spinning wasn't good and didn't add to the game, then that brings down the average of the game. So you no longer like it as much.
Wow, this is really interesting. I'm going to have to go through and read this a little more. So for product design, I mean, are you saying that, let's say you have 10 features and a few of them are 10, but some of them are really poorly executed?
Yes.
That averages to just a bad impression?
That's it. That's exactly it. And that's the wake-up call, because it makes perfect sense if you think about it. But it's the kind of thing where we, I think, are so lured in by the idea that we can make this kind of additive addition to something and make it just appeal just that much more to somebody in our audience, right? So like maybe a good example is, you know, with Mars Edit, for example, I think it was a good idea that I put the rich text editing in there, but the rich text editing is not as bulletproof and solid as the HTML text editing. So to some extent, that brings down the average of the quality of the app, you know?
Hmm.
And I probably shouldn't have used my own app as an example, because now I'm now I'm really like driving home But I just think that's so interesting. And if you look at a company that we, most of us at least, admire, like Apple, they have been doing this like either instinctively or deliberately for a long, long time. And they tend to avoid that sort of feature creep, right? And what that leaves you with is a frustratingly limited list of features that are all 10s, oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you think of it as an average, on average, 10. And, you know, like they could add like one feature that you really wished they had, but if it was implemented as a 2, then the average is down. Now suddenly Apple's product is more like a 7 than a 10.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, you definitely, we all know, you know, I mean, it's common advice to say do fewer features and do them well. But thinking about it in terms of this averaging kind of really blows my mind a little bit. I mean, it kind of opens it up and thinking about it in a different way.
Right. Pretty cool. For example, with our job board, if we had added some kind of like form input where you attach a resume, it would have been a tangible improvement to the service. But unless we really aced it, it would bring down the average experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I'm going to try to, you know, add to my little mantra here, the Flappy Bird presenter's paradox mantra. And it, I mean, it's probably even more applicable to marketing, because the fact is when you market something, you have the opportunity to omit whatever you want to. So, oh, here was a great example from the article. This is fascinating. Okay. They claim to have done this study where they presented potential buyers with an iPod Touch that came with the iPod, a cover, and one free song download. That's one option, right? The other option is just an iPod and a cover.
Okay.
And the people were willing to pay an average of $177 for the package that had the free download. For the one without the download, they were willing to pay $242 because the free download seemed cheap. So yeah, it brought down the average. So they think iPad, cool. Cover, cool. Free download, that's weak.
Yeah.
So you take out
the... That's not worth anything.
It's not worth anything. So you take out the free download and the value goes up.
Wow.
And so what is it about our products that we're saying like, oh, and you can also... Mm-hmm. You can also export to Commodore 64 format, right. You know, because you're thinking like there's somebody out there that thinks Commodore 64 format would be really useful. And then everyone else is like, this crap does Commodore 64.
Right. Yeah, I'm really guilty of that. Just today, or my new version of Sunlit 1.1 is approved over 24 hours ago now. It's still not in the store as we record. It'll hopefully be there. It has to be there by the time we publish. But anyway, I was just updating the app description with like, and this, and this, and this.
And this. Yeah.
I think there were good things. You know, it was like Dropbox and Instagram and Flickr. I mean, but it was that sort of and with commas. And
maybe I
fall into that trap more often than I think of stringing along features when really I should just be highlighting the one big one that, the quality, hard thing to implement, or the thing people really want.
Right. So for example, with Mars Edit, I'll use Mars Edit again here because another thing that Mars Edit supports is a variety of platforms, right? But it would not make sense for me to like highlight in marketing the fact that it supports an old and busted system.
Mm-hmm.
So to say like it supports LiveJournal.
Right.
Actually, that's a good example because the people who I want to sell this to are aware that LiveJournal is not a particularly viable platform anymore.
Yeah.
So if you say like this supports WordPress, Blogger, Tumblr, and LiveJournal, suddenly they go, LiveJournal? This is probably some old and busted blog system blog app because it supports this old and busted system.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you're just bringing, you just think you're widening the audience. You think you're just bringing in more people. And I'm not saying, for instance, that I shouldn't support a wide variety of things, but that's an example where marketing it, you should definitely not mention that.
That's a tricky thing for Marset, I think, because one of the values is that it is the only thing that can work with a crazy number of blog systems. So, I mean, you're right. Don't mention the ones no one uses. But still, it seems like there'd be a way to underscore the fact that it is compatible with a lot of things.
Yeah.
While still highlighting the, you know, WordPress. And I don't know, that is tricky. I'm not sure how you do that.
It's an example, one of many examples, I think, where we as programmers especially have to like put aside our rigid allegiance to logic and just say, hey, you know what? One of our jobs here is actually to figure out psychology of selling stuff so that we can support what we want to do. And the fact is, you know, supporting LiveJournal or something like that is going to appeal to like half of 1% of the audience, just like that Commodore 64 export feature. But you know, anything you work on, anything you add to the app is something you're like sort of proud of and you want to share it. But you actually have to balance that against whether sharing that will actually reduce your sales. Like imagine that poor fool who thought like, oh, free download will sell more iPods, you know? Or I think that was a fake maybe example, but some, you know, there's people in meetings like today who are saying, hey, why don't we offer some crappy free download with this?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even realize their idea may be losing the company money.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just the way like we market our own stuff, I think they're right to call it a paradox. The paradox that we, in trying to be more transparent about just how robust our product is, could be selling less of the product.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Anyway, that sort of came to mind because of last week's talk, but also because, you know, I hope that the job board is an example of being simple enough to exhibit its average high quality.
Cool. Me too. And everyone can check that out again at jobs.corent.org. And if it is missing some major feature that we didn't list in the, you know, that we thought wasn't important, hopefully we'll hear about that and we can add the stuff that really matters.
It will definitely add Commodore 64 support.
Absolutely.
Well, this week we are very glad to have back as sponsors of the show, CocoConf. CocoConf is a touring training conference for iPhone, iPad, and Mac developers. They bring some of the best authors, trainers, and speakers to the most passionate, engaged developers in a region. Together, they make magic. Now, Manton, CocoConf is a conference that both you and I have spoken at. Both you and I have enjoyed it. It's a great family-run conference. They go everywhere. I mean, they're always popping up somewhere. And chances are, if you live in the United States, they're popping up somewhere near you. In particular, this spring, they're coming to Chicago March 7th and 8th. Washington, D.C., March 28th and 29th. Austin, Texas, where Manton lives, April 4th and 5th. San Jose, California, April 25th and 26th. And Raleigh, North Carolina, May 9th and 10th. The thing they're trying different this spring is that some of these conferences, in particular the ones in Austin and Raleigh, are CocoConf Mini. That means they're single track. They're a little bit easier to wrap your head around, so to speak, because you don't have to make a choice about which session to choose. And Manton is actually speaking at the one in Austin, April 4th and 5th. So if you're anywhere in Texas, you can get yourself over to Austin. You get a chance not only to have a great time at the conference, but you get to meet the illustrious Manton Reese.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to speaking there. Looking forward to hopefully meeting and catching up with listeners. If you're definitely in the area, I hope you can attend the conference. And just lately, I've been working on my talk, finally getting it started. I have a month and a half. Get it together. I think I should be able to manage, hopefully. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really fun. And yeah, like you said, five cities coming up, starting in March, going to May. They're 2-day conferences. Some of them have an extra day at the beginning where they've got tutorials, so check that out too. But looking forward to it. Like you said, it's a great conference, and hope to see some listeners there. Oh, also, the early bird rate is done, but they have a discount code for Corent Tuition listeners. Use the coupon CORENT to save 20%. So it's a really big savings. Definitely check it out. The conference is affordable anyway, but 20% off, definitely use the coupon.
Yeah, it's a great way to let them know that you heard about the conference from us, which helps us a lot. And it's a great way to help yourself by getting that great discount. You can learn more about the conference at cococonf.com. And they have great, great site design. And click on any of the locations that interest you. You can get a detailed list of all the speakers that are going to be there. A bunch of great folks speaking at these conferences this spring. So check it out. Once again, cococonf.com and the discount 20% with CORENT. Well, Manton, speaking of CocoConf in Austin, our friend Justin Williams is going to be speaking in Austin. I guess he's supposed to be talking about the process of acquiring Glassboard, which is, you know, something, a service that we love. And it's been really interesting to watch Justin transition into this new role as like a one man social network czar.
Yeah. He's tackling a lot with Glassboard, a lot of platforms, a lot of new stuff to learn, you know, deploying stuff. I don't think most of his stuff has had a sort of a backend services aspect to it. I mean, using Dropbox is a lot different than using your own servers or your own app running on Azure or wherever it is. So I'm excited to see his presentation and see what lessons he's learned, as the title says.
Yeah, I mean, it blows my mind because, you know, you and I struggle to get our products out the door, but we're just kind of like working on one Apple platform. He's got Android stuff he's got to deal with, and this whole web app, and then he's got, as you said, all this back-end infrastructure, and that costs money. And you know how that goes. And like, as far as I know, Glassboard didn't really fall into his lap with a great amount of money coming in. Like, that's one of the reasons I think that it was sold. But it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do. It's you know, it looks like his approach is basically going after the, you know, the premium upsell. You pay him a monthly fee and get access to more features in Glassboard, like the ability to make more boards and stuff like that. Does that inspire you in terms of some of your, you know, one of the things that's interesting about what you do, Manton, is that you sort of have been bouncing back and forth between platform sort of apps and web, you know, hosted apps.
Yeah, that's true. And I like that. I've always liked kind of switching back and forth, although sometimes the web stuff drives me crazy. And I'm currently in one of those drives me crazy states. But I do like that. I like having that ability to be able to whip out web services and deploy servers and that kind of stuff, because I do think that's something that we should all be good at as iOS and Mac developers. People just expect sync. People just expect this kind of stuff. And maybe iCloud will work for you, but if it doesn't, you need to be able to deliver features that have server stuff. And so sometimes that means rolling your own. So I like being able to do that. I think it's a kind of a competitive advantage in some ways, but it's a lot of work. I mean, I often think, like, when we were testing the jobs board site, like, I think one of the first joke job descriptions I put in was like, Riverfold Software hiring a sysadmin, because I could really use somebody to, I mean, I can't afford to hire someone to do this, but I could really use somebody to just deal with server stuff. A lot of it is not creative, you know, work that I want to be doing right now. A lot of it is like, set up this cron job and make sure this, you know, task isn't killed off, and make sure it notifies me when the server crashes. I mean, stuff that someone out there is super excited to do, but not me, not right now.
Yeah. Well, how crazy do you think it is for one person, Justin, to try to run an entire social network? It's kind of like,
insane. Yeah.
You think of it as a project. Or as a product, rather, as an app. But in most respects, it's more about being a social network than about being any particular product that accesses that network. And it's like, right, you know, it's more similar to Facebook than you know, to a product app like Mars Edit or something.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And it also has a special a privacy angle to it too, that I think is extremely challenging. And I mean, I Justin can do it, but I'm just saying it takes special care to run a service like that. Also, there's some expectations.
Well, yeah. And yeah, he has to basically like forego ever feeling relaxed again.
Yeah. Well, like when I built Watermark, my web app for archiving tweets and app.net posts, I got a lot of feedback that people wanted it to work with protected Twitter accounts. And I made the decision early on, no, not going to do that, because it opened up, like, the way the app is architected just opened up this whole potential can of worms with having some tweets that were private, and that if I was hacked or they got out because there was a bug in the export code or, you know, something, I would feel really bad, because people don't expect you know, those tweets to be out in the open. So I made the decision that everything goes in there is public.
Yeah.
And that actually took a lot of pressure off me, I think, to just not worry so much, you know, like I back up stuff to S3, you know, whatever. I'm not too super worried about security because it's, you know, they're all public tweets anyway. Right.
Right.
And, I don't know. So I think Glassport has a special challenge with that. And he can totally pull it off. And I mean, the app's already been built. So a lot of that infrastructure is already in place. But it is, like you said, it is more like a social network than an app.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. I mean, obviously, it's the kind of the idea of one person running a social network is an idea that's, you know, definitely unique in history to these past few years, right? And it's because he's able to do things like leverage, you know, Microsoft's Azure hosting services, that it does blow my mind a little bit that, you know, one person can kind of just be the brains that puts into motion the movement of data on somebody else's servers. And then, you know, that's for all practical purposes, that's it's theirs. It's their network. But you're right, that security thing, that privacy thing is totally inverted from Twitter, for example, because mm-hmm. on Glassboard, you actually have to work to make, you know, like, for instance, our Glassboard, which, you know, has an invite code core int, it's still technically private. It's still technically completely 100% secure.
Mm-hmm.
We just happen to be very liberal with the invite code.
Yep.
So you actually have to, if there's one thing that's kind of like odd about Glassboard, it's that there is no like public stuff on Glassboard.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, we've gone out of our way to make it a little more public, but it's still private.
Yep.
You can't share links to it, you know, that kind of thing. The other thing with, I keep mentioning when we bring this up, like there's the building a client apps and building the web server part, which I'm familiar with. I mean, I've been doing that and it's challenging, but you can do it. The other part though, I keep thinking about is like the different platforms on the client, iOS, web, Android, Windows Mobile, maybe? I can't remember. If
that's probably Commodore 64.
Right, exactly. If not, he should export to it. People need that. But, and I wonder, like, so I think that all those clients were developed as native apps, right? Not using some kind of porting framework. But I think if I ever did that, we all know the right way to port software is to have it, maybe there's a cross-platform layer in C++, but the actual UI and sort of the core framework for the app is native views, native code. On iOS, obviously, that's Objective-C.
Yeah.
But I almost think I would use one of these porting kind of framework, like this App Portable. Have you seen this? AppPortable.com?
Sounds familiar.
They've built an Objective-C. I don't know what they've done exactly, but there's a, you know, basically you can run your Objective-C app on Android, and it costs actually a lot of money if you want all the frameworks and stuff. I mean, it's a big license.
Oh, I've heard about this actually, because I think they used our friends Cocotron as a basis.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Very cool. But I mean, so real apps are shipping with this kind of thing, and it's kind of a trade-off. But if you're just one person, how can you maintain native apps on so many platforms unless you have a significant shared code base?
I don't know. It's definitely a challenge. And I'm kind of curious, actually, speaking of this whole presenter's paradox thing. Now, Manton, if you say to me, you have this great social network and you have clients for iOS, Android, and Windows Mobile. Windows Mobile is like the Live Journal in that list.
Hmm.
And it kind of
ouch.
it kind of makes me question whether I'm in the target audience for that service.
Really? And yeah, that's interesting.
Like, well, just...
But you don't question it if it says iOS and Android, right? Because that's so...
No, it seems so like common. That's... I sort of accept Android in that respect. But let's face it, if it said it's just for iOS, I probably like it even better.
Right, because it's focused and you know the developers are only working on your platform.
I know that it seems to imply that the developers have a shared vision of the world to... myself. And I'm not going to fault somebody for saying, okay, to support Android. Hell, who knows? Maybe I'll support Android someday. I don't know. But there's something to that where it's like, oh, what if it said, like, there's also a Palm Pilot client, right?
Yeah.
At some point, the things that are supported by a platform, by a social network, do bring it down. They do make it seem like kind of lame. What if you have like a GitHub that supports CVS? You'd be like, really?
Right. Yeah. That's probably a better example even, because it's, or at least closer to the LiveJournal one.
Yeah.
Because it's so old and busted and no one wants the old stuff anymore. Yeah. You're right though. I mean, even I think back like when it was common for Windows apps to be ported to the Mac poorly, if an app was for Windows and Mac, I probably actually would question if the Mac version was great.
That's a good example too.
Nowadays, we don't really have that problem as much, but it used to be kind of a big problem, really poorly ported Mac apps. Anyway, I'm looking forward to hearing what Justin has to say about what he's learned in the few months that he's been taking this service over. Should be good.
Yeah, hopefully he can relax enough to step away from the keyboard for the length of time it takes to do these presentations and answer the questions. And then I'm sure he'll be rushing back to his hotel room to continue the endeavors of a one-man social network.
Right. Yeah, it's inspiring, though. I love seeing one person take on way too much and get it done. It's cool. Cause I mean, there's plenty of companies that have lots of people and they have a staff and they can do all this kind of stuff and they have venture capital, but more impressive when it's a small group.
Yep. And speaking of which, Manjun, I guess you and I should get back to taking on way too much. back to our foolish endeavor of trying to be one person companies, one-man companies, as it happens. Folks, as always, we welcome your feedback@coreint.org. Check out the job board, jobs.coreint.org, and we will look forward to chatting with you, Manton, next week.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.